Own good will due to his constitutional position. Therefore, there are so many states over the earth quarrelling because of ideological differences or other selfish motives. But a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira had no ideology of his own. He had but to follow the instruction of the infallible Lord and the Lord's representative and the authorized agent, Bhishmadeva. It is instructed in the Shastras that one should follow the great authority and the infallible Lord without any personal motive and manufactured ideology. Therefore, it was possible for Maharaj Yudhisthira to rule the whole world, including the seas, because the principles were infallible and universally applicable for everyone. The conception of one world state can only be fulfilled if we can follow the infallible authority. An imperfect human being cannot create an ideology acceptable to everyone. Only the perfect and the infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. It is the person who rules and not the impersonal government. If the person is perfect, the government is perfect. If the person is a fool, the government is a fool's paradise. That is the law of nature. There are so many stories of imperfect kings or executive heads. Therefore, the executive head must be a trained person like Maharaj Yudhisthira, and he must have the full autocratic power to rule over the world. The conception of a world state can take shape only under the regime of a perfect king like Maharaj Yudhisthira. The world was happy in those days because there were kings like Maharaj Yudhisthira to rule over the world. So here in Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that some of the pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam also mentioned in the Mahabharata. The Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be a scripture which expands the understanding and the meaning of the Mahabharata. Within the Mahabharata, there may be many more details as to what was said, what was done, how they were dressed, where they lived, what the palaces were like, everything like that, what the storyline was. But Srimad Bhagavatam is very important because it expands the essential understanding that may not have been gained in the Mahabharata. Especially it expands the understanding of the purpose of life. We at this stage of this great story of the Mahabharata, Yudhisthira was ruling with his brothers. Dhritarashtra was still allowed to be the chief administrator of Hastinapur. So, although all his sons had been killed, he was living somewhat in shame and disgrace, but still, out of kindness, Yudhisthira and his brothers allowed him to, sort of be like a chief administrator in Hastinapur. And the various ladies, such as Draupadi and Subhadra, they treated Gandhari and Dhritarashtra like a mother and father, so they were very forgiving. Kripacharya came back to Hastinapur, and he was Dhritarashtra's counsellor. And Srila Vyasadeva also used to advise Dhritarashtra. But you see him, you know, he was, even after the instruction of vision in Hague, there's just a little trace more of feeling somewhat guilty and ashamed that so many people had died in the Battle of Kurukshetra, so that, you know, he felt that, you know, so I could rule, so many people had died. And of course he saw in his kingdom that there were many women and children who were, you know, also grieving, you know, quite strongly for the loss of so many relatives. So he couldn't help, although, you know, to the major proportion, by hearing from Bhishmadev, his reason for lamentation had been removed, because he understood that everything was within the plan of the Lord to establish a worldwide rule, that rulership that actually represented God. So therefore, you know, Yudhisthira was somewhat satisfied, but still he couldn't help but feel some, you know, he was prepared to do his duties, but there was still a tinge of dissatisfaction. So therefore, you know, his position though was that he was the perfect person who was completely maintained and protected by the Supreme Lord himself, and therefore everything was perfectly in place for Yudhisthira to, you know, take up his duties as emperor of the entire world. He had the full cooperation of his brothers who were, you know, ruling his different ministers. He had been enlightened and instructed by Bhishma and Krishna, as described here. He was not a typical unenlightened political leader of a modern democracy. As Prabhupada mentions, even if modern leaders have some enlightenment, still they're just like puppets with no real power. Yudhisthira had full autocratic power to, you know, execute his will. Modern leaders, because they, generally they're unenlightened and they have no real power, therefore the world is full of so many small states just fighting and quarrelling. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, you know, they all have their own ideology. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he had no ideology of his own, no independent or separate ideology. But whatever was the Lord's ideology, he accepted. And therefore, there was unity throughout the world. Only the infallible Lord can create an ideology which is beneficial for all people, all living entities in the world, in all places, in all times. Actually, an imperfect human being cannot create that ideology. You know, therefore, communism and democracy and, so many other socialism and so many other anarchy. So many other ideologies, they're created by imperfect beings, and they simply create quarrel. Only a completely perfect personality with all known knowledge, I mean, in other words, the Supreme Lord, can create an ideology that is suitable for, you know, applicable everywhere. So Yudhisthira did not create his own ideology, but he followed that ideology of the Lord. He had no personal motive to create a separate ideology either. Therefore he could rule the world by these universal principles. And Otherwise, as when people are foolish and they do create imperfect ideologies, then when such fools rule the different parts of the world, it just creates a false paradise, as Prabhupada says. So, what was used here as enlightenment? It describes here Prabhita Vijnana Vibhuta Vibhrama. He was enlightened by what was spoken by Vishnudev and Lord Sri Krishna, the Infallible. Therefore, he engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge because all his misgivings were eradicated. Now, in summary, Yudhishthira's enlightenment was that the world is not dependent, is not independent of the Lord. Actually, the world is completely controlled and dependent upon direction of the Supreme Lord. That is his enlightenment. And he understood that all living entities in the world, therefore, are not individual doers. Generally, people think that they are an independent doer or performer of that action. And Yudhishthira understood that the whole world was dependent upon the Lord. That means the material energy and all the living entities within were not independent, performers of action, but they're completely dependent upon the Lord. So this is the, basic sense of Yudhishthira's enlightenment. So Yudhishthira, this is what he had understood from Vishnudev and Krishna and many sainted persons. And it was just that little tinge that he still, he was now prepared to do his duty, but the enthusiasm still wasn't quite full. So he was with Krishna, and he asked Krishna to once again, please say something about, the eternal truths, just to, give me that full enthusiasm for my duty like that. So Krishna began to speak to Yudhishthira, and he said, look, Yudhishthira, you should not indulge yourself in this grief, because actually, it will increase the grief of all the citizens. If they see the ruler is, disturbed over the war, they will just follow you, and they will also, they're already there feeling very disturbed at the end of the great war. You actually need to literally show them that there is reason to celebrate, that the world is in fact now fully under the protection of the Supreme Lord, who is very satisfied with the situation of the world and very satisfied that unwanted elements have been removed. So that is a cause of celebration, that actually the world is in a situation as the Supreme Lord would desire it. So he said, you perform yajnas, you perform the Ashvamedha yajna, you give charity to the Brahman, and as you have festivals and like this. And you perform your duty and celebrate that everything is going according to the order of the Supreme Lord. And in this way, yourself and all the citizens will become removed from, will have even the last traces, if there's any little traces of sinful activity or sinful reaction, that will all be removed, and the grief and everything like that. So, and then Krishna began to speak a little bit about the eternal truths. And he said to Yudhishthira that, he said, actually now, at the end of this battle of Kurukshetra, you have to contend with the greatest enemy. And that enemy is your mind. He said, you have no army to assist you in this fight. When we fight the mind, we fight the mind alone. It's our battle, our individual battle. You can't bring in the army. You have to deal with the mind, your own mind. You have to fight it. You have to deal with it yourself. He said, you only have one weapon and that is knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge. He said, you already know it. You've been instructed, you know, by myself, Bhishma. He said, but now you have to stand firm on that knowledge and do your duty. And so Krishna just reiterated, what is that knowledge? That all living beings are eternal spirit souls. They are not the material body. This world, this material world, is a temporary place of illusion. And therefore, as an eternal spirit soul, wrongly situated in a temporary material world of illusion, your real duty is to go back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. That is the prime duty of every living entity. So this is Krishna's ideology. This is the very purpose of material creation, is to give the living entities an opportunity to go back to Godhead. And the whole battle of Kurukshetra was fought so Krishna could establish that his ideology of helping, creating a world situation where people have an opportunity to become situated in knowledge by which they can go back to Godhead, that is, you know, the very heart of the battle of Kurukshetra. That is the ideology which Yudhisthira, you know, accepted, yes. So that is a good, having been reminded, you know, this is the underlying philosophy of the politics, of the ideology, and therefore he reminded he was still very happy to perform his duty. The Krishna continues that how do we go back to Godhead? What do we do with this knowledge? Knowledge is like a sword that you cut away your attachments. We're attached to the material world, we're attached to happiness in the material world, and we, the opposite side of that is we become averse to what disturbs our happiness, and we become absorbed, the mind becomes absorbed in the happiness and distress of this world through attachment and aversion. And therefore, instead of thinking of going back to Godhead, we're always just trying to adjust happiness and distress in the material world. But the very nature of this material world is that it is a world of duality. You will never find happiness without distress. And in Kali Yuga, there is a big dose of distress. Srila Prabhupada gives the example in the Bhagavatam that how, you know, as an example, how all happiness in the material world is, you know, contaminated by some distress. He said that, you know, just to drink milk, which of course is the source of health and happiness and, you know, keeps the mind, you know, intelligent. You know, you have to milk the cow, and of course, you know, to maintain the cow is a lot of work. You know, we know it's trying to, you know, maintain farms. Even within the Hare Krishna movement, you get people to milk the cows. It's a lot of work. It's a difficult task. So, you know, for any happiness in the material world, there's a huge amount of distress. You know, to get your cup of milk, you know, to look after those cows is a lot of work. You know, look after the farm, you know, milk the cows. Yeah. So that's the nature of happiness. So people become, it's the very nature of happiness in the material world that it's always mixed with distress. And in Kali Yuga, where the mode of ignorance is very strong, that just is practically this tiny, you know, tinge of happiness and mostly distress. There was so much suicide, so much intoxication, so much anxiety. So rather than just, you know, spend our whole life, you know, trying to create a situation where there's no distress, which will never happen, we should actually use the weapon of knowledge and just become detached from that whole process of happiness and distress in the material world and try to, you know, go back to the spiritual world. So, in fact, Yudhisthira's lamentation was based upon seeing things on the bodily platform according to his attachment and aversion. That's why he was distressed. Because he was seeing everything on that material platform. And Krishna reminded him, you know, try and see things from the spiritual platform. All the people that you're mourning for, they're already in new bodies. They're still existing, none of them are dead. And they're all living in new bodies with whole new lives. And you're here mourning. You don't even know what they're doing. You know, they could be doing anything. You're mourning for them. They're existing in new bodies. And of course, most of the, you know, men die on the battle of Kurukshetra, which means that they would go to the heavenly planets or something like that. So, you know, he was seeing from the bodily platform, but he had to see from the spiritual platform. So, you know, the prime duty is to see everyone as the eternal soul, servant of Krishna, and to make a permanent solution to this problem of happiness and distress by going back to the spiritual world. So then he said to Yudhisthira that how do you do that? So we know you take the knowledge, you become, you know, detached. And he said what you need to do is how do you practice that knowledge, because you perform your duties. So we all have duties in this world. But you do them for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And by that, you will raise to a platform of spiritual realization. If we perform our material duties for the satisfaction of the Lord, the activities actually gain a spiritual quality. And Krishna explained that to Yudhisthira. And by gaining that spiritual quality, it then elevates our consciousness. So we perform our material duties, but we do them in such a way that we're trying to please the Supreme Lord. So our activities become spiritualized, and because our activities become spiritualized, our consciousness gradually follows and becomes spiritualized. Therefore, all of our activities should be performed in this and with the constant association of devotees, who hearing and chanting and meditating upon, you know, such instructions like we're getting here from the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we do our material duties for the pleasure of the Lord, and we associate with devotees and hear and chant in their association, our consciousness will be elevated. If we do our material duties, but we don't associate with devotees, we don't get that transcendental knowledge, we may think we're doing duties to please God, but we may actually not be doing that. And our consciousness will also not very quickly, you know, become spiritualized. So therefore, you know, Krishna summarized in Yudhisthira that you throw off this ignorance, you know, you cut it away, you do the needful, you rule this kingdom, perform yajnas, serve the Lord, serve his representative, and you rule this world with justice and compassion. So this is Krishna's instruction. So therefore, you know, Yudhisthira, after being enlightened, what was spoken by Bhishma Deva and Sri Krishna, he engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge. That's what it means, he, you know, after these instructions. Now, generally, people in this world are very proud and they follow their own ideology. So this is Krishna's ideology, but most people in this world will not follow Krishna's ideology. That is their pride. They don't perform their activities to please Krishna, but they perform their activities for their own personal glory and enjoyment. In one sense, going against the laws of the material world. And therefore, you know, such persons are punished. Actually, we have, you know, generally people think that you have your own ideology, that's good. People think that is very good. But actually, it's punishable by the material energy. How does one get punished? Srila Prabhupada, he gives an example. He describes it, you know, when people go against the plan of the Lord, you know, such persons who are inimical to the plan of the Lord, you know, they're classed in the Bhagavad Gita as demons, mudhas or rascals, you know, very, very harsh words. But, you know, actually one time Srila Prabhupada was talking to his disciples, he was saying, you know, he said he was in one country and some gentleman said to him, look, you know, can you use some other term besides mudha, you know, for people who don't follow Krishna, you know, and demons, can you use? Prabhupada said, no, that is the only definition, you know. And, you know, Prabhupada laughed, you know. He says, you know, Krishna has one definition, that is it, you know. And we just accept Krishna's ideology like that. So, anyway, what happens is Krishna allows the demons to associate with each other. This is how he punishes them. And gradually they argue with each other, because they all have their own ideology. And therefore, because they all have their own ideology, they'll naturally argue with each other, and therefore they'll try to ruin each other's plans, and they all fight with each other like that. And that's what we see in the world. They can't stop fighting, because that fighting is a punishment for going against the plan of the Lord. Okay? So, he gives the example that sometimes the teacher wants to punish two naughty boys. So what he does is, they're both naughty, he puts them together, and he gets one of them to pull the other one's ear. And the other one will pull his ear. And then you'll pull my ear. And they'll just go back and forth like that, and then they'll get angrier and angrier and angrier, and they'll just pull each other's ear. The teacher does nothing. He just engages. He gets one to pull the other's ear. So, you know, that's what's happening, you know. As if Russia is pulling America's ear, America's pulling Russia's ear. So, this is how Krishna punishes them. So, whereas we see, you know, for Yudhisthira there's no punishment. Therefore, by Krishna's grace, he was surrounded by ministers who were his very dear brothers, who all had the same ideology and who absolutely adored Yudhisthira. That is the state of not being punished. You know, there's no punishment, therefore. But when there is punishment, you'll be surrounded by people with, you know, different ideologies who will, you know, want to fight constantly. So, now of course, the mass of people in Kali Yuga do not know God, they don't know religion. You know, there's no question in one sense of people understanding the ideology of God because they don't know what is God. In fact, they blame God. You know, people don't think, oh, if we accept God's ideology, that will fix our problems. They have the opposite opinion. That it's because people have accepted God's ideology that we have so many problems in the world. You hear people say that. I hear people say that all the time, you know, that you know, all the wars in this world are created by religion and things like that. You know, that philosophy that actually it's God's ideology, because they don't, because the wars are not being fought over with God's actual ideology, it's people presenting their own ideology and saying it's God's philosophy. That, so therefore, because it's not, they don't know what is God's ideology. So therefore, if some ruler, you know, is ruling some country and he says, you know, we should go to this country and take all the oil and kill all the people there. This is the mother of all holy wars. This is God's ideology. Oh, well, we don't know what is God. That sounds good. Sounds like God's ideology. Yes, let's go. Take the oil, kill everyone. This sounds a lot like God to me. So, because they don't know, they think that actually religious wars are because, you know, of God. Even the girl guides, There was something like 100,000 girl guides throughout the world. Anyone been a girl guide here? Yeah? What was your pledge? What are you pledged as a girl guide? What's that? To God and the Queen. Yeah. So now, I used to be a cub. I bought a cub. Dot, dot, dot. Anyway, the girl guides have reduced down to about 30,000, from 100,000 to 30,000. And whose problem is it? Whose fault is it? It's God's. Therefore, what's the solution? No more pledging allegiance to God or the Queen. That is the solution. So they have changed. You know. So if you're thinking of joining the girl guides, think again. But actually, you know, by doing that, they've actually created more problems, because now, you know, a huge faction of the girl guides are angry because they want it. So now they've got something more to fight over. But you know, if people actually get a sense of it's actually natural for people to want to serve and follow the, you know, plan of the Lord, that because, you know, we are spirit souls who have an eternal relationship with the Supreme, and it's actually very natural, you know, unless someone has been, generally you see it in children, you know, you say to them, you know, about God, and we should say that. They're very happy to accept it. Very natural. They don't find it to be a horrible thing. There's a story of one of Prabhupada's leader books that there was a little 8-year-old boy who Prabhupada was walking along the beach, and this little 8-year-old boy went over to the sea, picked up some shells and some sand, and went over to Srila Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, you know, I've got these shells and sand, what will I do with them?" Prabhupada said, "Put them down and go wash your hands." So, you know, he put them down and he went and washed his hands, and he was reflecting that he was so happy just to follow any instruction of Prabhupada, because he knew he was pleasing God. You know, so he went and put it down. Just anything. "Oh, I put the shells down, I wash my hands." Prabhupada tells him. Yeah. You know, it's very, very natural. So, as you said, people don't understand what is the soul. How can they possibly understand God? How can they understand religion? How can they understand what is, you know, God's ideology or religious principles? You know, Krishna and Bhishma, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita instructs that you do your duty, as he said to Yudhisthira, you do your duty and you think of me. This is the instruction, you know, of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. You do your duty, you think of me. You think of my birth as being transcendental, try and understand how my birth is transcendental. Try and understand how my activities are transcendental. That I'm not part of this, you know, Varnashram system, although I have established it. You know, you do your duties, associate with devotees, and hear and chant in their association. So, now, these are the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, but generally, if people do want to follow God, they take their material duties themselves as the supreme religious occupation. They don't take the other part of the instruction. You perform your material duties in such a way that you're trying to please God, and gradually this elevates your consciousness to spiritual consciousness. They feel that they're happy to leave their consciousness fixed in the material world of trying to adjust happiness and distress, not trying to go back to God here, but just make a nice place here and just execute their material duties properly. They think that that part is the only part of religion. They leave out the most important part. You know, there are Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that you know, religious principles involve threefold austerity. Austerities of the body, austerities of the mind, and austerities of the words. So, austerities of the words, speaking pleasingly, not agitating people. Austerity. Speaking truthfully. Speaking something which is beneficial for people. Regularly reciting scriptures, just like we're doing now. These are austerity of the words, austerity of mind, to be always satisfied, not always disturbed. To, you know, be simple, you know, to you know, not be duplicitous, or you know, to be straightforward and honest. To be gravity. You know, not frivolous, but you know, to be thoughtful, self-control, and you know, always have the mind purified, to not have bad, you know, thoughts of, you know, motivated by lust and greed, always in the mind. So these are the austerities of the mind. Austerities of the body, to worship the Lord in the temple, to worship the priests, the Brahmins, and the guru and superiors, like the mother and the father. You know, not that. You know, pleasing the mother and the father is one's only religious principle. There's a whole bunch of them. So what happens, sometimes people take as a religious principle, they might take one of these. Yes, I'm looking after my mother, I'm looking after my father. That's, you know, I'm a good man, I'm pleasing God, who can, you know. But there are other things. There's celibacy. Non-violence, simplicity and cleanliness. Actually, how is it possible to please one's superiors, even one's parents? You know, one presents himself before the mother and the father. Oh yes, Mum, I would do anything for you. I love you. Here are some flowers. Now I'm going out to kill a few people. And, you know, oh, thanks for the flowers, son. I said, you're a good boy. You know, is that? You know, if you want to be a good boy, you have to be clean. You know, is not a mother teach the children from very birth to be clean? You know, so if they're not clean, if then they're dishonest, and you know, their you know, mind is disturbed by some lusty desire. So you know, not celibate. How is it possible? So anyway, these are the various austerities of that's religious principles. Now, people do this, these religious principles, and they think, I perform these religious principles, this is the all in all, now God owes me big time. I kept myself clean, I went to the church on Sunday, you know, I didn't swear very much this week, you know, I reduce my smoking and drinking to just 1 or 2 days of the week. You know, I perform so many religious activities just to please God. Now I can, you know, get my remuneration. So God, you know, you make sure that I have the better car that I'm, you know, thinking of, and I'm going for this better job, and you know, I want a bigger house, and you know, chandeliers, and you know, and plasma screens and what have you. Actually, you know, these activities are just to make us fit or properly situated so that we can come to the very beginning the platform of being able to present ourselves to serve God. Just like, you know, if you take up service to, say, the Queen of England, and the person, you know, they're going to the palace, they're going to serve the Queen. So they get before the Queen and they said, yes, today I have done my duty. You know, I put on new clothes and I had a bath because I knew I was coming here. I've controlled my mouth. I'm in the palace. I'm not going to be swearing. And, so many things. So now I want my payment. And the queen would think, well, you know, all of those things are just qualify you to stand here and start your service. Your service hasn't started. You know. And so you do your service. And that, and even then, doing the service, there has to be some devotion and dedication, you know, to the queen's purpose. So, you know, many of these religious principles, people think that's it. You know, I've done a few things and I get my big reward. Actually, most of these, all of them, are just to bring us, we perform our material duties, and it brings us to the point where we become fit to, you know, approach the Lord from the very, very beginning and offer ourselves, now can I please start the process of learning how to offer you service now that I've come here in this purified state at that moment. So therefore, that's what Krishna is saying. You do your duty. Gradually, this will spiritualize your activities, and then your consciousness will become spiritualized, and then you become, you know, fit to serve the Supreme Lord. So, and of course, we see from the example of Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, that when one takes up the service of the Supreme Lord, how very kind, you know, the Lord is to his devotees who actually take up service. So we see that Krishna, you know, always, you know, Krishna is actually staying in Hastinapur. You know, he won't go until Yudhisthira gives him permission. So he is God, but he's so pleased with the service mood, the love and service mood of Yudhisthira, that he becomes practically obliged to him. He becomes so, you know, such feelings of love for his servitor. Not that one takes up service to the Supreme Lord that it is something, you know, not very nice, but actually the Supreme Lord becomes very, very much sells himself, you know, gives himself to his devotees. Very, you know, wonderful. There's a story in, that Rupa Goswami, he wanted to he wanted to please his elder brother Sanatana Goswami. He was thinking, you know, my brother, he's such a wonderful devotee of the Supreme Lord, so many nice qualities. You know, if I had some nice ingredients, I would cook him a little feast, and I would, you know, serve him some prasadam. And as he was thinking like that, then, you know, sometime later, this little girl came past, said, oh, no, Babaji, you know, my family lives not far from here. We're doing some ceremonies. We had so many ingredients left over. Can I, you know, give them to you? And so Rupa goes on to say, oh, yes, yeah, very nice. So then, you know, he cooked up some, you know, nice prasad offered to the Lord, and then he invited Sanatana Goswami. And then they were sitting, and then Sanatana was saying, you know, we live under a different tree each night, we live in this simple forest, you know, where have you got all these ingredients from? You know, and he told her, is there this beautiful young girl? Oh, what is that beautiful? Who is that young girl? And so he described him, her. And after describing her, they both sort of come to the same conclusion. Oh, that was Radharani. Mm-hmm. You know, Radharani. And then he, you know, he became angry. What have you done? You know, we are trying to serve Radha and Krishna without taking anything from them. We're trying to develop our love, and you're taking service from them. You forced me to take service from Radharani. So he became very angry. But you know, as Srila Prabhupada describes, this pastime shows that the loving relationship between Krishna and his devotee is that the devotee is always taking every opportunity to do everything for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, not thinking of their own profit or gain at all. That is love. And the Supreme Lord, he is always thinking of his devotee in the same way, that he is trying to offer service. and the devotee is thinking, no, I will not accept it, and Krishna is thinking like this. So there's a beautiful loving reciprocation like this, which is shown, you know, you see with the pandavas. You see with Srila Prabhupada as well, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, he was just fixed on just doing Krishna's mission, you know, establishing Krishna's ideology throughout the world. He had no other, he never acted for his own, you know, personal protection, gain or pleasure at all, not for a moment. But Krishna, he was always looking for the opportunity to offer service to Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, you know, Krishna empowered him. Krishna, you know, inspired even the most fallen conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. You go and serve that, you go and serve Srila Prabhupada. Krishna inspired them, you know, because he did not want, you know, that Srila Prabhupada should ever go without anything. So, you know, people don't understand the nature of the soul, they don't understand the nature of God, they don't understand the nature of Guru. The same principle, God, you know, Guru is representing just the ideology of Krishna. Just in the same way that people think God is trouble, anyone who represents God, they're also the cause of problems. You know, people think that if they follow a guru, you know, they will lose their individuality, they will lose the, you know, benefits they're trying to, you know, personally gain, you know. They feel that they will, you know, somehow, you know, be ruined by following, you know, the guru who is representative of God. Actually, there was one, as a person, there was a documentary on recently, I don't know if anyone saw it, where there was this Indian man who was born in Philadelphia. I think he's an accountant or something like that. His name was Vikram. And he decided, because, you know, the philosophy of the world is that, you know, don't follow God, you know, you're your own God. You've got your own ideology. Don't follow guru, you've got your own, you're your own guru. You know, basically, this there's no need to follow guru, no need to follow God. So what he wanted to do was to prove that you don't need a guru, and that everyone is their own guru. So what he did was, although he just looked like an average, worker in the office, he grew a long beard. This is only in recent last few years. Grew a long beard. He put on the saffron clothes. You know, he had the long hair and tied it in a knot. He had like a dunder type thing with a big om thing. And he spoke in a different, you know, in a guru sort of a way. You know, just whatever that is. And he went, you know, to America collecting disciples and found all these different disciples who accepted him absolutely, although practically, you know, he didn't say much, except he was sort of pushing them in the way that you are your own guru. And they were seeing him as the guru, and he was saying, yes, but my teachings are that you don't need a guru. So they accepted those teachings, and gradually they, you know, started to believe, yes, I am my own guru. Like this. And then after some time, after many, many months, he organized this big meeting, and he went back, he shaved off his beard, shaved his hair, put on his ordinary accountant's clothes, and he went and he revealed to them, here I am. I'm not a guru, and he spoke in his normal voice. And, you know, a lot of them were really angry, really, really angry, because they'd been completely cheated. You know, they were just worshipping this person. And to them, you know, it proved, in one sense, what he was trying to prove, that, you know, you don't need a guru, they're all fakes. You think you need a guru, but I was a fake. That proves you don't need a guru. That's his philosophy. You thought you needed a guru. I appeared as a guru, but actually I was a fake. Therefore, you don't need a guru. I prove that. Others actually still thought him as a guru. Oh, this is the most wonderful teaching. This is just getting better and better like that. Anyway, you know, what is the result? For those who actually thought that, you know, weren't really, really angry with him when they killed him, who thought, yes, you know, I have now realized I don't need a guru. What I always thought that I'm my own guru with my own ideology, it has been so successful, you know, because I wanted that new car and I just fixed my mind upon it and controlled my mind and I got it. You know, and another one was saying, yes, and I got that new job and I have this wonderful new boyfriend like this. So they're thinking, you know, this proves, you know, that I'm a wonderful guru and, you know, like this. So, in essence, they're in the same position as they were, just absorbed in the happiness and distress of material existence. Like that. So, you know, this is the nature of Kali Yuga, is that people, you know, they don't want to follow the Supreme Lord. They have no understanding about spiritual matters. They have no understanding about the soul. They have no understanding about the Supreme Lord, about religion, what is his ideology. They have no understanding about guru. You know, Krishna's ideology is that, as he's explaining to Yudhisthira, that when you understand this ideology, that this world has one purpose. There is one purpose for the material world, is to help the conditioned souls go back to Godhead. That is the reality of, you know, that is the one ideology. If we see that the material world has any other purpose, it means that we're an illusion. And those, if we have any other ideology and we reject Krishna's ideology, you know, we're revolting against that law. You know, even the people of Kali Yuga may band together and say, well, we have a different ideology and we're going to create, you know, a unity with our separate ideology, which is different from Krishna's. So Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice example to explain how, you know, the foolishness of that, you know, mentality. He gives the example that in a prison, prisoners are there, of course, because they've revolted against the common plan or ideology of the state, the laws of the state. So they get put in prison. Now, if those prisoners try to form a brotherhood, which they usually do, they form, you know, like a brotherhood, a universal sort of a bond amongst the prisoners. Even with that brotherhood, they will not be able to go against the laws of the jail or the state. And in effect, you know, all the different plans that people have to create a brotherhood or, you know, one state, you know, world state or what have you, they're all like the prisoners trying to revolt against the, you know, prison with their brotherhood. You know, it's actually meaningless and it's useless. The real brotherhood in the prison should be, let us help each other to get out of prison. That brotherhood is sanctioned by the jail and by the state. So if they have a brother, yes, let us try to get out of the prison, that will work. Because it is that brotherhood is consistent with the brotherhood of the entire country. If they have a brotherhood that is revolting against them, it will fail. In the same way, Krishna says, if you have a brotherhood, let us all help each other to go back to Godhead, that will work, that brotherhood will work. Because it is consistent with the brotherhood of the whole, you know, universal affairs, material creation. In this way, we see here, I'll just read this verse again, that Maharaj Yudhisthira, after being enlightened by what was spoken by Vishnudeva and Lord Krishna the Infallible, encased himself in matters of perfect knowledge because all his misgivings were eradicated. Thus he ruled over the earth and the seas and was followed by his younger brothers. So, following in those footsteps, of course, we follow, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives us a very clear understanding of the teachings of Lord Sri Krishna, is that we should perform our material duties in such a way that we're associated with devotees, hearing from devotees. That will bring us to spiritual consciousness. That spiritual consciousness means we see things properly, we see the nature of the material world as a place of illusion, we see ourselves as a spirit soul misplaced in the material world, and we see our real purpose in life is for the spirit soul to go back to the spiritual world and serve the Lord in complete harmony there. So these are the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we follow. Any questions or comments? Or other ideologies? One sense of, I was listening to a lecture the other day, which your Prabhupada was saying, one sense is a good sign when people don't ask questions, because it means they agree. They're not going to challenge. Any comments? Yeah.
If someone says you have to follow God's ideology, that means God is basically forcing you to follow Him. So there is a question of free will then.
He is the Supreme Father, and it's natural for, you know, someone who is looking after someone else, you know, a subordinate, to, lovingly force them in the right direction. So, you know, Krishna does that. We say force, but, you know, let's look at what that force is. Okay, so we're saying that Krishna is forcing us all, you know, Krishna is so evil. You know, he's forcing. So what does he do? He says, you know, come together, you know, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, have some prasadam, chant and dance and like this, and have a wonderful life, you know, in the association, you know, pure-hearted, saintly person. So just like we're sitting here, you know, in this temple room, it's beautifully clean, you know, there's beautiful deities, and a nice association. You know, everyone is sitting here peacefully, quietly, just meditating upon transcendental philosophy, you know. Or we could say, well, you know, Krishna, you're forcing us to sit in this peaceful temple that's so clean, with a beautiful smell of, you know, incense. You're forcing me, you know. Otherwise, where would I be? I would be in the hotel, you know, in Fitzroy, with the, you know, smell of the ashtrays and the spilled beer and the vomit and So many, you know, a place full of untamed people with all their own ideologies, each, you know, competing against each other, you know, the bodily conception of I and mine, you know, a state of complete fearfulness because everyone is, you know, competing with each other. They've all gone quite crazy because of the drugs and the, you know, the anxiety. And, you know, you're forcing me into this temple. You know, I did. Yeah, you know, so if we see that force that as something bad, then, you know, that is what people do, people see. That's, you know, that therefore, that's why we, therefore we say mudha. That's why Krishna says, you know, if, you know, those who don't surrender to Krishna, there's one word for the mudha. You know, they want to live like an ass. They want to live like an animal. And they cannot see that, you know, they're suffering so much and you're trying to, you know, help them. And they're so just like an animal that they can't appreciate that. You know? So therefore there's one word to describe. You know, who would swap? Who would swap sitting here in this association in nice prasad? Who would swap that to, you know, go to some, you know, horrible nightclub or this or that, that or the animal? Who would swap that except an animal? So the two-legged animal. So, you know, that sort of loving force, just like Srila Prabhupada gives the example, you know, there's prayers and shreyas. I think shreyas is where you act for the long-term benefit. Krishna is getting Yudhisthira to rule the world for the entire world's long-term benefit, that they all go back to Godhead. Right to this very day, we're still benefiting from what Yudhisthira did then. To this very, the fact that we're sitting here in this temple is because of, you know, what we, you know, what Yudhisthira did for us. He fought that battle of Kurukshetra. And prayas is where we act just for now, and we have no consideration of the problems that we cause, you know, that are coming immediately after we do something. But, so Prabhupada gives the example that when he was young, he didn't want to go to school, which is natural for most children. They don't want to, you know, go to school. So, you know, that's the prayas. And, you know, he went to his father, and his father, you know, who was a little encouraging in one sense, he was, yes, all right. You know, you can go tomorrow, you know. And you know, then this sort of went on. Anyway, his mother, Rajanya, you know, she got very angry. No, you must go. So they got some man who would harness Srila Prabhupada and, you know, forcefully take him to school like that. And then after some days, he got used to it and decided to go. But, you know, that is natural for a parent to sort of forcefully do something because their motive is love, is they know that it's for the benefit of that person. So that sort of force, motivated by love, for the benefit, for the ultimate benefit of the person, that is good force. You know, not that every time we use some force, that force is always wrong. If force is motivated by love, and to the ultimate benefit of someone, that is wonderful. You know? Just like, you know, a knife, you know, a doctor will use a knife to cut for the benefit. You know, that sort of, you know, violence, aggression is acceptable. Otherwise anyone else cuts the body, you know, we'd be very disturbed. So, you know, that is very forceful, you know, to cut at the body. But, you know, we accept. Not only do we accept, we pay the big money. We pay the doctor. I'll give you big money, thousands of dollars. You please cut me. It's for my benefit.
Attitude, how do you preach to them?
Yeah, you know, because in Kali Yuga people have degraded, you know, quite a lot. There's not a lot of intelligence, you know, left. And, you know, so Srila Prabhupada's policy was to gradually purify people, prasadam, and, you know, to hear the holy name, and, you know, they'll come and see the deities, and, you know, they'll associate with the devotees, and gradually when they become a little purified, then we can speak to them, you know, and from the very, you know, understanding, we just try to understand what they understand and, you know, what they're ready to accept, and we just speak to them on that platform. So, you know, first of all, if they don't understand it, they're not the body that is soul, and that's, you know, one of the main things that we may speak to them about. You know, after they've been purified by taking prasadam and hearing the whole, and you can see that purification means that they're somewhat inclined to want to hear from you. You know, when people are not purified and they don't want to hear, or they argue with everything, then just keep feeding them prasadam. Stop them talking, give them pakora, and, you know, just sort of develop a friendship, and then gradually over time, they, you know, that friendship means that they keep coming, and one time gradually they were here. You know, I've seen people that, you know, for, you know, sometimes 10 or 15 years coming to, you know, particular temples, and will not accept the philosophy, but they come, they eat the prasadam, they chant, and then after, you know, you think they're just never ever going to accept, and then just one day they just, you know, the purification kicks in, and they just start chanting, they want to hear, they start reading the Bhagavad Gita, they start doing so. It takes a thing.
Once one person asked me that we are in this human body and we got so many facilities, we are here. So that itself means that everything is for enjoyment, my enjoyment, or enjoyment. So nothing to worry about, just anger. So in relation to my previous question, similar. So one can say that if God wants only His ideology to be executed, and if someone is not, then lovingly He will try to push him towards His ideology. But then why at first place He created negative side? You know, why He has given individual ideology as well, if that is not good? Why not only good part, you know, only one ideology? The reason there is an individual ideology, that means that is for our enjoyment, basically. It has to be there, and someone can put up that. So why
well, see, you know, the first premise is that, you know, if there's a God, I have so much facility, you know, so if God has given me facility, you know, I should enjoy it. First of all, what is that enjoyment? You know, first of all, where is the enjoyment? You know, there's just like, you know, a pig thinks they're enjoying it, actually they're suffering. Who would want to be a pig? You know, who would want to wallow in the mud and eat, you know, pig's food? And, you know, the life of a pig, and, you know, your wife is a sow, and, you know, you have all these little squealing piglets. You know, it's not a real, you know, enjoyment, but the pig's thinking they're enjoying. Our enjoyment in this world, example given in the, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that, you know, they used to get the prisoner and they would dump them in the water. And they'd be suffering, you know, suffering. The suffering becomes so extreme that practically going to die. And then at the last point, they bring their head up and they take a breath. But that's their enjoyment. You know. In material life, you know, when there's a little bit of respite from intense suffering, we I'm enjoying so much. This is the life. Working 5 days a week, you know, going to work in the traffic, coming home to the traffic, working in a job I have no interest in doing, with people who are, you know, give me trouble all day. I come home exhausted. You know, there's some little quarrel with in the family. And then they want me to do so many things. I get a little bit of disturbed sleep. I can't sleep because, you know, there's so many disturbances. Back to work on the weekends, I mow the lawns, and you know, I did. And then, somewhere within all of that, you know, there's every so many months, there's a couple of moments of sex pleasure. And there's, this material life is, you know, so, you know, as Prabhupada said, you know, rubbing the two genitals together, this material life is a place of pleasure and enjoyment. You know, we say, you know, what is that enjoyment? For this, and then, you know, you say we have so much facility for our enjoyment. That's like a prisoner saying, you know, we have so much facility to enjoy in this prison. You know, who's the crazy person telling us, you know, we should be getting out of here, you know, for doing anything else, you know. I've got my own self. You know, the prisoners, actually they say that, you know, the prison is the safest place to be because there's bars on every window and no one can get in. You know, that's a joke. But anyway, you know, they become attached to their facility. You know, in fact, a huge amount of prisoners, when they get out of prison, their first goal is to get back in as soon as possible. So they're thinking, we have so much facility. You know, obviously, this prison is around Germany. Why would I want to leave? And if they make me leave, I will come back. So, someone thinking like that, you know, this material world has so much facility. That's because they're ignorant of what facility actually is. We will hear in the next few verses what facility is. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was ruling, then you get facility. You know, and we will hear about that facility. What is that facility? You know, in Kali Yuga. We will hear what facility is. And what to speak, you know, when you live in the spiritual world with a spiritual body, you know, our facility is, you know, is birth, death, old age, and disease. The facility in the spiritual world is no birth, death, old age, and disease. That's the facility then. So we take this the facility, but actually, the right conception, if we're in knowledge, we see actually this is a place of no facility, no eternality, no ananda, no knowledge. Where's the facility? If you don't have, you know, if you're going to be killed, it's like, you know, the Prabhupada gives the example. If I say to you, here's some facility, nice bowl of sweet rice, beautifully cooked. You eat this, and you finish, I will shoot you. He said, I have so much facility. Where's the spoon? Now this is meant for my enjoyment. An intelligent person, what is this facility? I'm going to be shot. As soon as I finish. So, you know, real facility is that, yes, I'll have the sweet grass without being shot, thank you. You know, so the facility is in the spiritual world, and that's what Krishna is saying, going back to Godhead. So there's no enjoyment, there's no facility, but an animal, a person who's, you know, on the platform of an animal, they think like that. But human beings should not be thinking like that. If they're thinking like that, it means they don't have the intelligence, the basic intelligence of a human being. And if they don't have the basic intelligence, you know, then they will fight like cats and dogs. intenzione. You know, so sometimes in helping people to come to Krishna consciousness, one of the first things is to when they start to see, yes, I am suffering. You know, that I'm suffering in the material world. That is a big revelation, and it's an important revelation. And when they come to that, they can then go to the next step. How then? How do I stop that suffering? Oh, you come to the spirit. So then, be good. Until they come to that point, practically, they will, you know, there's very little you can do. You can't talk about Krishna's pastimes. You barely can't talk about the holy name. You can't talk about anything. Just sometimes, just to help them to understand, yes, I'm suffering. And once they understand that, then you can go through it.
You gave an example of ideal, right?
Well, last one, yeah.
We'll
finish. I follow the ideology of the one ideology of the temple. We will finish. Okay. Okay.